Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 134. I'm Steve Borsch, and I am on with Tim Elliott.
Yeehaw!
Graham Thickens.
Happy August.
Phil Wilson.
Hello!
And our very special guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Good morning.
How you guys doing?
Excellent.
Great.
You like my rockabilly music that I chose?
Just jump in and hang on.
Yeah. You know, I love rockabilly, and after having been in Austin, Texas a lot down on 6th Street or 6th Avenue, 6th Street, listening to the music, oh my God. I mean, it's just, you can wander into any bar down there and it's just phenomenal. Incredible music. So, big week this week. A lot going on, and let's just, Phil, because you were there early. Let's talk just a quick recap of Project Skyway and Coco. What a great facility.
It is a great space. I'm kind of curious to see, you know, it's such a big cavernous spot. And I know that Don and Kyle have done a great job trying to, you know, segment the space off and try to make areas of intimacy there. I'm anxious to see how it translates as far as conversation and being able to be able to find your space where you can talk amongst yourselves with, you know, your company or whatever, those campsites, especially. I'm kind of thinking that maybe they ought to put, tent roofs on those campsites. But other than that, I thought it was just a great place. A lot of energy in the room, a lot of people very excited. And I was just really excited to see how well Don and Kyle have done with the co-working concept here in the Twin Cities,
You know,
St. Paul and now Minneapolis. And then, of course, we talked to Jem Erdem at Project Skyway, which was kicking off as well. And they're working out of that space. So it was a nice night. A little warm, but a nice night.
I was going to say, Phil, I had one meeting down there the first week they opened when they really weren't quite ready. I mean, but it was, I think, July 12th when they opened.
Yeah.
And it was fine. Of course, the place wasn't very busy yet, but I thought a very nice place to have a meeting. And you know what I think is one of the coolest things about the space? Did you see all those old phone booths along the wall that they tore out? They're going to put doors on those. So when people are talking on their mobile phones, they can go behind a damn door and not bother everybody else.
Which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
And then you can change into your Superman outfit there too.
Yeah. And there's about 12 of them, or maybe even more than that. I mean, there's a lot of them. So I thought that makes a huge difference, because I would not want to be trying to work or have a meeting with somebody blabbing loudly on their mobile phone, you know.
I was talking with Kyle, you know, early in the evening, and you know the big board there. There's mm-hmm. that huge big board. It's basically in two different segments. One is the standard was the old fashioned big board with the flipping digits and things like that. But there's also a spot that's digital. So he said that everybody is. They've got hackers working on how to hack into the boards and post messages. He says, especially that digital one. He says, amazingly, it's 160 characters long. So,
funny.
Well, what about that dweeb area up there on the catwalk?
I was just saying, you're commenting on the picture that you posted about the dweeb stand
the
here.
Dweeb stand. Nobody knows what we're talking about, so I'll put a link in the show notes.
No, don't put a link in the show notes.
It's Phil standing on this catwalk right in front of a chalkboard with nothing on it. So,
he had to
I put dweeb's stand here and right behind him.
But he said that while, he took that picture, from the safety of standing next to the bar.
There we go. Well, Phil, I wouldn't have done it if I don't love you, buddy.
You know why he didn't come with me though, guys? A rather attractive young woman came up to him as soon as he walked in the door and said, "Hi, Steve. I've always wanted to meet you. I read your blog all the time." And Steve was there for the next 45 minutes.
I was not. But of course, because that stuff happens to me all the time.
Sure. You know? That's right.
Are you Steve Borsch from Connecting the Dots?
Yeah. And Minifate? Come on. Do you know Julio Ojeda Zapata? That happens to me all the time, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yeah, but usually there are people dressed in Star Wars outfits. But
There we go. Well, I will say, though, that I agree with you on the acoustics, Phil, because we have been invited to come as a drop-in members for Minovate to come down there. But we're also going to do 3 live podcasts from there. And I do also think about the acoustics. We're going to sound like we're in Westminster Abbey.
Of course you think about the acoustics, because that's what you do.
That's what I do.
Worry about the sound quality. But no, the video turned out fine, so we'll be great.
Well, let's talk about who put this thing in the show notes here about the Fun Sports Blogger Trivia. What was that all about?
It was me. You know, Albert Marucci, our friend over at Provident Park, put together a thing with his client Verizon to sponsor a sports bloggers trivia contest. It was kind of fun. I mean, I got to tell you, it was held at Gabe's. Is it Gabe's?
Drive. Next to the big data center that used to be Agility.
And we had a great time there. They had a couple of four sports bloggers gathered together, they kind of showed their trivia knowledge of sports, and Verizon gave away a Thunderbolt, and we just had a good time. I thought it was interesting. It's another effort by Albert and social media folks to put together events based solely on social media interaction. So it was a good time. So I just wanted to give kudos to Albert on that. Yeah. He went out and bought game show software, guys. You can actually buy game show software.
Sweet.
You can have
Albert buzzers. Is the man. I'm having lunch today with Albert because apparently he was looking for a rig. He wanted to put his cell phone on a tripod. Do some filming of the event, and he kind of struck out. He couldn't find any Adobe gear in the Twin Cities, and so he jerry-rigged a mount of some sort, which I'm very intrigued about. We're gonna have lunch today just so he can show it to me.
It was a great night. We had a lot of fun, and Gabe's was very, very good host. So
who won the Thunderbolt?
Nathan Ide did.
Oh, really? Is he still at Deluxe?
I think he is, yes, but he's also a sports blogger.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question, because when we think about Albert and doing the stuff with Verizon, because we went down to that Verizon rollout of the 4G in the Twin Cities, Graham.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of articles that have been coming on, a lot of posts about the fact that isn't it great that Verizon and now AT&T and everybody's pitching video and how great all this access is, and
they're throttling it
and oh, by the way, there have been one guy that did a test, and I'll find the link and put it in the show notes, about how if you did 1 hour worth of video that Verizon is showing, and then an hour of something else, you'd basically burn through your cap in 1 day.
Wow.
And so it's like, on the one hand, they're pitching all this great stuff, and on the other hand, oh, by the way, you're throttled, so you can't really use it more.
Now, who's throttling?
You can use it. You just have to pay more for more space, bandwidth.
Yeah.
Who's throttling more, Verizon or AT&T? Because AT&T just announced that some of their heaviest users are going to be throttled, but they really didn't say how much.
Right.
Or what the,
Well, they're both 2 gig and 5 gig caps. So for those of us that formerly had jailbroken our iPhones, I've gone back, and one of the reasons is that AT&T can tell when you're tethering, and so I'm sure it's the user agent that they see, Mac Safari coming through, and so they nail it. But
Tim and I just sit here and smile as we worry about that on our Android devices right now.
So, Steve, are you saying you've been throttled?
No.
Oh, we'd like to throttle him. Trust me.
No, I'm not. Uh-uh. All right, let's segue.
Turn to a taxi.
I'm defending myself. Hey, what the heck about the stock market and tech stocks in particular? Oh, my God. I love what you put in here, Phil. Is your butt unpuckered yet? I mean, it's like, oh my man, I tell you, Apple lost $15 yesterday. Google's down. I mean, everybody's down. The whole tech sector's down.
It's not going to turn around until Italy and Greece get their act together.
Yeah. Well, that's because the rest of Europe is in problems.
Either.
Yeah.
So, but weren't tech stocks hurt a a lot less than other sectors, though, Steve? I haven't really compared.
I haven't either. I haven't seen
that. Would be my bet. But well, I did hear somebody say that no matter what sector, they were all hit. Every sector was down. But that was a big drop for Apple. I can't remember the last time there was that big of a drop. Of course, as it gets higher in price, $15 sounds like a lot more. You know, it's the percentage drops that you want to compare, of course. And IBM and HP and others were down about the same percentage.
Yep. Say, did anybody go to the Nerdery open house?
I missed it. I was going to go, and I just couldn't make it at the last minute.
Okay.
Wednesday night. Yeah. I'm sure they had a huge turnout at that thing.
It was a retro gaming night, wasn't it? Sort of.
With the recruiting objective, I'm sure, because they're always recruiting new developers. But I think it was pretty much open to anybody in the tech community. So we'll have to get a report on that from somebody.
Well, you know, in a lot of ways, they're kind of a stealth company. I mean, they've really beefed up their Chicago location. And, the stuff that they do is just, you know, at the end of the day, doesn't look like it's all that hard and technically, but the stuff is beautiful and it works, and they add a lot of fun little flipper flappers when they, if you go to the Nerdery site and you look at that little fake dot matrix printer printout on there, I'll put a link in the show notes if people haven't been to the Nerdery site, but it's little touches like that that I think are incredibly creative that they're doing. And I, the only reason I was hot to go, couldn't go either, was to find out what they're doing with HTML5. You know, are they embracing it already? Are they?
I think they have to embrace it. They've got to embrace it. It's growing more rapidly than anybody thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They have some really brilliant developers over there. My one thing I'm wondering is, you know, how hard they must have to work, and they do a very good job of this, I think, retaining these great developers of theirs, I'm sure many of these guys and girls could go anywhere, you know, including out to the valley and probably make more money. Of course, it would cost them more to live out there too. But they're up. I think Kathy told me they were up to 170 or 180 employees now, counting Chicago.
Wow.
And that was a couple months ago. They're probably 200 by now, for all I know.
Well, but, and you know, there's an interesting shift that I've been watching a lot, because I'm highly, highly interested in especially tablet publishing, iPad publishing, but watching what's happening about some larger publishers doing an end run around Apple's in-app and in-publication purchasing requirements by going all HTML5. And it's going to be real interesting, because I think that there's going to be a lot of upside opportunity there, because you can just do so much with it. Oh, did you see that Adobe has done a pre-release of a tool that for HTML5 development?
Yep.
So it's
Adobe Edge, right?
Adobe Edge. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Yeah. That's the name of it. So.
Man, and ironically, based on Flash.
Well, it is. Yeah, I know. I know.
Baby jobs
So, but Julio, you had huge adventures this week, and I gotta tell you that before we set this up, so you went to Apple, Google, and then you were in the audience at This Week in Tech and their new studio, and then you were also on the iPad Today show. But before we do this, I just want to set this up. So first off, the first time you were on one of the Twit podcasts, I think you were on Twit itself, This Week in Tech, weren't you the first time?
I've been on This Week in Tech three times, and once in studio, twice on Skype. Yeah.
Okay. The first time was that I watched. It was I thought it was really cool, because I've been listening to Twit in some fashion right from the very beginning, and to see what Leo Laporte has built, this new studio. They sunk $1.2 million into this studio, and it is absolutely state-of-the-art from a from a, how shall I say this, sort of a reachable cost perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're using the New Tech. I used to work for New Tech, the New Tech TriCaster, which you can take multiple video feeds in and do all kinds of wonderful stuff. Really impressive how they've leveraged LED lighting and inexpensive consumer-centric or prosumer cameras that they've rigged up on booms and all kinds of stuff. And anyway, so we'll talk more about that as we get into it. But what was the whole genesis of this adventure? Why did you, what drove you to go out there?
I usually go out that way for work. You know, I usually have some kind of work-related pretext, but this was on my own dime because Google has a visiting authors program. And one of their PR guys, you know, we were just kind of casually talking, and he mentioned that they have a visiting authors program and that I should come out and speak as part of that. And this conversation has been going on for months, and you know, it finally we finally got it nailed down, and so you know, when the formal invitation came, I then talked it over with my wife, and we cashed in some frequent flyer miles, and off I went. This was a situation where I had to watch my money carefully because it was my own. I didn't have an expense account or anything like that.
So implying that you don't watch your Pioneer Press money at all.
Exactly.
Well, I can't like just write off my meals and stay in a nice hotel and you know, that sort of thing. So what I did, you know, this is kind of cool. The guy who publishes my books, Mitchell Levy, he lives in Cupertino, for heaven's sake. He's lived there for many years. His very, very, very nice house, which if he sold and moved to Minnesota, he could buy like a big mansion on Summit Avenue.
Exactly.
I wrote a post about this yesterday. If I go on a trip, it doesn't take a lot to make me happy. Just put me within shouting distance of an Apple retail store of some sort and a Chipotle. And here's the deal. Mitchell is just a block from De Anza, which is kind of the main drag that Apple's on, De Anza Boulevard, and just a 5 minute, heck, a 3 minute walk from his house is this little shopping complex with a Chipotle right by the highway. And then you go to if you have some lunch at the Chipotle, then just hang a left, walk for 10 minutes, you're at Apple. I mean, how perfect is that?
So you went to the company store. I saw a couple of photos that you put on Google Plus.
Yeah, exactly. And so I had dual reasons to be at Apple. One was, you know, standard tech tourism. You have to make a pilgrimage to the Apple company store. You have to genuflect several times.
Genuflect several times.
And make your mandatory purchase. I bought a metal coffee mug. So, I was there with a good buddy of mine here in St. Paul, Mark Fawcett, who's even more of an Apple geek than I am. Had never, you know, he'd always wanted to go there, and he was, he just for a very long time wanted to go out there. I had never been there, and so we've been talking about this for months. So I was telling him that, you know, at some point, if I have a reason to be out there, we should try to coordinate. And you have friends to visit, and I have friends to visit. But at some point, we should converge and hang out. And so he and I, for about 3 days, we just did the Silicon Valley thing together. And you know, going out there and doing this stuff was fun. But I gotta say, you know, bottom line, you know, having a good buddy to do it with, you know, made it all the better.
So what you know, because I totally understand the pilgrimage to Apple because I've done it too. I was there. I remember in the 80s going mm-hmm. to Cupertino and driving around, you know, just looking at the buildings and stuff and going in the company store and so on. But Google sells bits. And as much as I use Google apps I'm probably more Google centric than I am Apple centric in many ways. And what is there to see there? I mean, you went there too, right? Well, of course, you were there to speak, but I mean, I mean, is there anything to do? Or I suppose they have T-shirts or something for sale, but.
Well, I'm about half and half. I'm about half Google, half Apple. You know, those are my two tech loves, as I like to say. And going to visit Google, and my buddy Mark was with me. He kind of tagged along with me during the entire day that I spent at Google. And I have to say, you know, without exaggeration, that visiting the Google campus was as much a thrill, if not more of a thrill, than visiting Apple. For a couple of reasons. A, I just love Google products. But B, see, I'd go out on my morning walks in Cupertino and go to Apple. And walking the Apple campus is fun up to a point. But the problem is Apple is a hyper secretive, super private company. So its main campus buildings are arrayed in an oval. So there's this string of big buildings along the oval. There's one infinite loop, two infinite loop, three infinite loop, and so forth. And in the center of that oval is an area that you can't go if you don't work at Apple. And so you're stuck. You know, outsiders are restricted to the outer edges. And in fact, in the evening, security guards materialize out of nowhere, and you can't even get close to the building. So that when they close the company store, suddenly any reason for a member of the public to venture on the campus suddenly evaporates, and then security guards appear at every street corner, and you're like told to stay away. I mean, that's what Apple is like.
Well, Julio, just so you know, they have antimatter bullets.
They do.
Yeah, so you have to be very careful at night.
So, did you see any of the iPad HDs when you were there?
Yeah.
No.
Just hanging around the campus. You know, they were using them at the cafeteria or whatever.
Digress briefly, as a member of the press, I got to go to three infinite loop, which is just around the bend from one infinite loop in the company store. And if you go into the building of three infinite loop, go in the main entrance and then hang an immediate left, there's this little room which looks like an Apple retail store, only much, much, much smaller. It's this tiny little product showroom with a conference table. And that's where, if you happen to be visiting the campus for reasons related to tech writing, that's where they host members of the press for briefings. And the timing worked really well, because just before my trip, they announced they released Lion, they released the new minis, they released the new MacBook Airs. And so when products like this come out, I have like a phone briefing with Apple. But I told Apple, hey, you know, your products came out, but I'm going to be in Cupertino just a few days from now. So why don't we just hold off on the phone briefing? Because then I can drop by and do the briefing in person. And so I got to meet all the product managers, and we all sat around a table and, you know, and sipped the traditional Apple bottled water and, you know, had a good time. I joked with them, though, because Apple product briefings have sort of a kabuki quality. You know, you have to sort of sit back for 50 minutes and just wait for them to sort of drone on about the new features and, you know, what's great about the products. And so I joked with them that when I'm in my office, I can just play with my foosball, you know, while they're doing the thing. But when I'm there, you know, in person, I have to sort of be on my best behavior and you know, not a lot, so...
So Julio, you know, Apple seems to be on this this binge to get rid of optical drives. They've dropped it from, obviously the Airs don't have them, but now the Mac Mini doesn't have it. So did they talk about that as a conscious sort of strategy that we don't need DVD drives anymore?
Yeah, their spiel was their position on that seems to be that, you know, we don't necessarily have anything against optical drives per se. But we're just looking at our customers, and usage of these things is just dropping. I think secretly, you know, Steve Jobs is like rubbing his hands in glee because he can't wait to get rid of the damn things. But I think their point is well taken, that that people aren't using them as much as they have, and so Apple is just kind of sort of nudging this to its logical conclusion. Doesn't make a lot of sense for me with the mini, though, because people use those as media center devices. And, you know, people still want to play Netflix DVDs and so forth. So,
well, and you can't, I mean, their portable, DVD player is not terribly robust. So
yeah.
That's the other thing, you know, but anyway,
back to you were asking me to compare, Apple and Google. And so I was going to sort of segue from this hyper secretive Apple campus. Here's a really cool thing about visiting Google. The grounds are completely open. So when you get to the Googleplex, you can wander the grounds, because the Google campus is this very eclectic smattering of buildings, and the grounds, you know, between the buildings are completely open. You could just walk the grounds. They have a sculpture. They have this really weird sculpture garden with a sculpture of Jacques Cousteau and things like that. And they have like wacky things like this this dinosaur sculpture with the bird that stands on one, like flamingos. There's this giant T-Rex sculpture with flamingos all over it. Just all kinds of weird wacky things. You can see Google employees playing volleyball, you know, and sitting at these big picnic tables with these big umbrellas, you know, in the classic Google colors. And so I was struck, you know, I was thrilled to be at Apple, but also, you know, somewhat slightly miffed. Every time I visit the Apple campus, I feel slightly miffed because, you know, I'm not a member of the inner sanctum, and therefore I have to sort of be kept away. You don't feel that at Google. It's more of a welcoming place, although you can't just barge into any building. You know, there's security for the buildings, but
yeah, I could see Julio going, "Hey, Sergey, man, how you?" You know, high fiving Sergey and Larry walking into their office.
Yeah, they get that all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then if you have business at Google, the other the other thrilling part about if you have if you're escorted, there are all the cafeterias. Google is famous for its cafeterias. You know, you can eat sushi in one place, you can have a sandwich and pickles at another place. There's this one place where you just walk in and there are these nice ladies just handing you tropical smoothies, and it's a lot of fun.
It's kind of like my office.
So did they have tropical smoothies before? Yeah.
did they have the ice cream sandwich out in their sculpture garden?
Yeah. I didn't actually stop, but I went by and saw all the pastries. So,
well, now you got to tell us about Twit. So, again, to set this up for everyone, this week in tech started in a what they called the cottage, up in a little tiny room, was where Leo first did the first show, or the first few shows, I guess. And then they built a much bigger area. And a woman that he hired came in and built something called Skypeosaurus, which was four Mac minis running Windows and the Skype version for Windows, so that each participant could be on a separate channel for their audio and video. And one thing led to another, and he kept going, and they kept getting advertisers as the critical mass was built and so forth. And now he's got, I don't know how many shows, 30 shows or something, and they're now doing a daily tech update show. And they ended up building a studio down the block in Petaluma, California, in an empty building, an old furniture manufacturer. And Leo has publicly stated in an interview that they're on a run rate to do well over $3 million this year in gross revenue. And so they built this studio, $1.2 million in it. And it's just, I mean, it's awesome. And so you went there. I saw a picture of you standing by Leo with a Twit fez, which is one of his trademarks. And so tell us about the studio and tell us about your experience there.
Well, this is easily the highlight of my trip because I'm just a big, I had been to the Apple and Google campuses before, but I did see the cottage once, but this was my first visit to the studios, which had just, they were in their shakedown week. You know, they had just literally just opened their doors, and it was just, I was just tingling because I'm a big Leo Laporte fan, and the studios did not disappoint. They're really, really beautiful. in a number of ways. I'm not sure who they hired, you know, to do the aesthetic design, but there's a subdued yet wacky quality to it with railings everywhere and, you know, stylized Twit logos and very, you know, subtle but very effective lighting. Just the ambiance of the place is really amazing. And I like it because it's a sort of a combination workspace. You know, people have their desks and their workspaces, but they're right in the studio. It's just basically one open space with one area for the daily news show, another area, sort of a conference table type area for shows that have panels like, you know, Twit and so forth. And then sort of a cozy sit down, like living room like area for shows like iPad Today. But they're all kind of in one place. My friend who was with me, he works in video production, and he was a little stunned that while the shows are going on, you know, people are going about their business and talking on the phone. And he was kind of amazed because, you know, traditionally, if you're shooting some kind of a TV-like show in a studio, there has to be absolute silence. And that was absolutely not the case here. It's just a very informal sort of beehive kind of a place. And it's kind of amazing that they're just using their cameras are just these little prosumer cameras on stands or booms or rigs and so forth. They're everywhere, but it's just, you know, you have this image in your head, you know, of TV studios with the big, you know, big cameras. You know, that's kind of obsolete at this point, but you still sort of think, you know, TV studio cameras big, but there is these teeny little cameras that shoot fantastic video. So anyway, I was there in a dual capacity as a guest, and so my what was fun is I did not know this, but Laporte's daughter Abby is at least for the summer is their receptionist.
Oh.
So I walked in and there was and I recognized her instantly. It's Abby Laporte, for heaven's sake. She's the one, you go in the front door, and then she's the one that leads you to the audience sitting area. But she did a big detour around the edges of the inner edges of the complex so that we could hit the fridge, and she offered us all cold beverages. I thought that was just too cool. And there was my preferred beverage was there, Diet Pepsi. I was delighted. And then
wait a minute, was that just some placement advertising? Is that product placement?
Oh my
we
god
just heard?
it was
Julio, do you have a deal with Pepsi?
I drink the stuff by the gallon. So
do you have
really?
A deal with Pepsi? Really? You just kind of snuck it in there. It was
you
very
know
crafty.
That, and you know that aspartame turns into formaldehyde, which, by the way, I'm on the Formaldehyde Industry Council. This podcast is brought to you by... No.
Just kidding.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Julio. I'm just giving you...
No worries. And then we got comfy in the audience area. And the audience area, it's kind of cool because the audience area is almost dead center of the studio. You people are sitting in the audience, and all they have to do is, like, depending on what show they're there to watch, they have to, like, swivel in one direction for TNT, another direction for iPad Today, another direction for Twit. And so I'm sure the people at Twit have mixed feelings about this. On the one hand, they want people to come. They almost want to be a tourist destination and sort of build a following, you know, by inviting, you know, people to attend. But at the same time, I'm sure every so often they have these guests that just can't control themselves, and they sort of barge onto one of the sets and hold out their hands and say, "Hi, you know, I'm a big fan of yours," while the person is doing the show. I'm sure that happens a lot. In fact, I did that.
On purpose or by accident?
Oh, I'm really embarrassed. You know who Dr. Kiki is?
Sure.
Yeah, Dr. Kiki. She walked in a little earlier before this incident happened. She walked in a little earlier with her baby, and I was so mesmerized by her baby, most beautiful baby I've ever seen, that I didn't realize it was Dr. Kiki. I was paying so much attention to the baby and almost none to Dr. Kiki. But then later I saw her sitting on, you know, in the living room style set. It's like, holy crap, that's Dr. Kiki. And, you know, without thinking, I just, you know, in a split second, decision, I just kind of barge onto the set and say, "You're Dr. Kiki. I'm such a big fan." And holy crap, she was right in the middle of doing her show.
Oh.
So she kind of looked up at me. I wasn't sure if she was like, stunned or homicidal or maybe a combination of the both. But
that's funny.
She kind of glared at me. I think she might have gritted her teeth a little bit and said, "Oh, hi, who are you?" That's a little embarrassing.
So did you get the note? Did you get the note yet that says, "Julio, thanks for being on all of our shows. You'll not be back."
I'm sure. But the one really fun moment was I was sitting in the audience of iPad today, but I was also there to be a guest on Tech News Today. And before every show, there's prep. The people that are going to be in the show gather around a lunch table, which is sort of in the back, which you can't really see. And so I was supposed to be there for show prep, and I give my buddy a hard time about it, about this. I sort of brag about this to my friend now because I was like I was an audience member for iBet today, but then Jason Howell, who's a producer for TNT. He then walked up and said, "Hey, are you Julio? Because we're gonna do show prep now." And so I turned to my friend and said, "Mark, I can't do this audience stuff anymore. I got business. I got stuff to do. See ya." And so he kind of laughs about that now. And so being on TNT was a big was kind of a big thrill because Tom Merritt. One of the hosts is, formerly of CNET. CNET's another tech media operation that I follow closely, and I've been a Tom Merritt fan for ages. I just love the guy. He's really, 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 really nice guy, and I confirmed that in person. He's just a very down to earth guy. And so being on the show with him was a big thrill for me. I always get massive stage fright when I'm in a situation like that, when I have a camera pointed at me and I have to sort of perform and I have to speak intelligently and, about the tech events of the day and, try not to say something completely stupid. And,
unlike being on this podcast where you can just feel free to be as stupid as you want.
That's right.
Right.
Stupid.
We do it every week.
Yeah. Right. The factor that sort of triggers the stage fright is the camera. There's this camera pointed at me. Somehow that camera just scares the living crap out of me.
So we talked a little bit about, you've obviously been to Apple, you've been to Google. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on as far as the patent wars.
As Google
continues to sort of, start to dominate in the mobile space, and is now accusing, Apple and Microsoft of really sort of nuisance suits on patents that may not necessarily be theirs. What do you guys think about that? Is that just the cost of doing business, or is this going to ultimately be good or bad for the consumer?
Well, ultimately this is all about, offense and defense when Nathan Myhrvold, who is the chief technology officer of Microsoft, left and started Intellectual Ventures and would get scientists and technologists and lawyers together in a room, and then they would talk about the future and what was possible and what was likely, and then they would write it up and they would file a patent on it. And so he's created this war chest of patents, and Apple bought into it and Cisco bought into it and a bunch of other companies. And this is all about, creating this defensive bubble around what you're doing and what the technology is. And in a lot of ways, it's a much more complex and much more sophisticated fear, uncertainty, and doubt FUD that's being put into the marketplace. Because if you have all these patents, this is my opinion, but if you have all these patents and you look at how can we stave off the growth of Android, if you can put FUD out there, to the point where developers and investors and manufacturers of devices begin to get a little hinky about how much to invest, it's going to slow down the rate of growth. And at the end of the day, that's what that's all about, in my opinion. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, no, I agree that, that Apple and Microsoft and other folks are kind of banding together against Google. And they want to slow them down, and they're trying to do it with the patent system. And, you know, it's, I can see if you have an innovation and you want to protect it and you're actually, you know, you built a product and all that, that makes sense to me. But if you're just putting patents together for the sake of trying to get licensing fees from people, I just don't see how that really, you know, it sort of slows down innovation. It doesn't like, it doesn't foster innovation. So that's my concern is, are all these patents, especially software patents for stuff that is not, not productized at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was always the, you know, cause Graham, you and I've talked about this before about process patents and about the, you know, somebody figures out how to take two or three things out of some value chain and then they apply a patent to it. Now they have a process patent and anybody else that wants to do the same thing has to pay a fee. And the most startling example of that is the law firm in New York that bought the patent to timeline editing for video. And so if you had a timeline with little icon, you know, little thumbnails of the video segments, and you were going to edit that, be able to edit that timeline, they had a patent on that dating back to the late 80s. And they went after Digital FX. They went after NewTek. They went after all these different companies that had timeline editors. And ultimately it was weakened to the point where it didn't matter anymore. And I'm sure that's why Apple bought the Final Cut product, because there were patents on that that could help them circumvent the thing. But yeah, it's inherently there's just some stuff about the whole patent system that just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Tim. You know, what's that quote? First, kill all the lawyers.
Yeah.
Who said that? Yeah. Anyway, it comes to mind in something like this about, you know, stifling innovation for sure.
Well, I remember asking Doug Olson, you know, he's leading the Microsoft group here, and Doug's been in the game for a very, very long period of time. And
used to be at Adobe.
Used to be at Adobe, absolutely. Yeah. And I asked Doug once, I said, what happens to a startup that is looking to build some dweebazarb, and you go out and you search all the prior art, and you search the, you know, you hire a good law firm, and they search the patent filings, and they search the current patents and all that, and they try to find something that is, you know, a hole that you can get through. And yet there's all these other fringe patents around the edges that really stifle what you can do. I mean, if you have icons laid out in a certain fashion, then that's a, you know, that's a, you're stepping on somebody's user interface patents and maybe their process patents. And I just think it makes it 10x harder for entrepreneurs to develop new stuff. So to your point, Tim and Graham, I mean, it slows innovation down.
Well, the big problem is that if you're a small company, you don't have the resources to withstand these court challenges. It effectively shuts you down.
Yeah.
So, you know, so only the big players can do these long court fights. So that's one problem.
Yep.
You know, and it's just, you know, there's has to be some reforms, I think, or we're going to see innovation really, you know, kind of slow. In this particular case, I think that they're going against Google.
Yeah, my perspective from working with startups, you know, they all have to look at whether they're going to pursue a patent, and it's a major expense for them. You know, that a lot of the money they end up raising would have to go towards to even pursue a patent. So it's, you know, it's not going away as an issue, and it does tend to slow down innovation in more ways than one. The whole subject of patents and girding yourself against the big guys.
Well,
in this particular case, as I was going to say before, you know, they're ganging up against Google on Android because they've kind of changed the licensing model, where instead of having a licensing model where you license the software on a per handset basis, they give it away for free, basically. So all of these suits are to get money either from Google or from Google licensees to make up for that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll tell you, we are really fortunate here in this market to have some of the best patent attorneys and IP law firms in the world.
Yes, we do.
I mean, you think of, you know, Merchant and Gould and
Schwegman Lundberg.
Yep, and too. All the way down to our pals at New Counsel. We've got some very extraordinarily smart and world-class law firms here.
Yeah, particularly in software, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So what else is up? I mean, I'm sure, Tim, you're thinking about Winecast, maybe pitching that to Leo Laporte so you could be out there in the Napa Valley area doing your
flying
show.
Flying into Petaluma International Airport.
Yeah.
You're right.
No, tourists are going to go.
I'm not sure if the model works beyond
tech.
You know, tech, because even if you said, okay, I'm going to do a food and wine network or something like that, right? There's just not enough critical mass to go around that. I mean, if you look at all the successful models, you've got, you know, Leo and his thing, you've got Dan Benjamin with his 5x5 network.
Yeah.
And all of those are kind of tech based and they have critical mass. I'm not sure if you could get that around, you know, food and wine and even travel. Maybe if you mixed all of those together, you could. I don't know.
I'm inclined to disagree. I think that could work, but it's not just because I think the subject matter lends itself to it, but you also need a genuine personality, you know, somebody who has a knack. And the reason I love Twit so much is because Leo and the other people that work, they just have, I mean, their shows are so good, not necessarily because of the subject matter, but because of the people that are running them. And I mentioned that because this former friend of Leo, Jason Calacanis, has sort of stabbed him in the back. At one point, Jason sort of casually asked Leo if he could do a show that was this week. And, you know, I can't remember what it was, this week or something or other. You know, I'm just going to do this one show. Kind of a similar sounding name to your shows. Is that okay, Leo? Do you have a problem with that? And, you know, Leo, he's a very, very nice guy. And he said, yeah, sure, no problem. And then Jason Calacanis just sort of went forth and created a network of this weekend shows. He's got this entire network of shows like this. And it was kind of a dick move, frankly. But you watch those shows and they're terrible. They're just absolutely terrible compared to the genuine article. And so you need that. You need that those personalities, those talents. Without that, it doesn't matter what your subject matter is. It's just not going to work. But if you have those personalities, you can make anything work. I think, you know, a wine and food network would do really well.
Yeah, I think you'd have to have some of the top people, though. So, you know, if you could have some top chefs and you know, bloggers and writers and that kind of thing on, and do like what Dan Benjamin does in 5x5, where he brings on, John Gruber and Syracusa and a bunch of, and Merlin Mann, and does these shows. You could do something like that, but I'm still not sure if you could grow big enough to be like it, to be Twit-like with a vertical like that. But maybe I'll try something like that, and we'll see.
Well, listen, unlike the folks over at Twit who just seem to kind of keep going and going and going, we like to keep our casts down to about an hour, so we probably ought to end. Anybody know what's coming up this week that we should be on the lookout for? Graham, anything specific?
As far as events next week, is that mini barbecue coming up yet, or is that
end of the month?
Week? Yeah, it's the 26th.
End of the month, the 26th.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town. These weekend events in the summer aren't always something I can get to. But
yeah, those of us that don't have cabins, it's pretty much wide open for us.
Yeah.
is there a problem with taking things like that across state lines, Graham? I'm kidding. Never mind.
But across straight line, state. I didn't.
The stuff that you have in your car.
Oh, okay.
It was funny when it was in my head. By the time it got out of my mouth,
I bet you he edits this out.
The Thanks, Phil.
I can't think of any events next week. There's a little bit of a slump, you know, the August slowdown maybe until things kick in September.
Well, yeah. that Cocoa Minneapolis hackathon's going on.
Oh, really? When is that?
They're going to start that.
Well, that's every week, isn't it?
Yeah, it's every week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
what night or what day? Same day every week? Or
I think it's every Wednesday.
And I think they're working on the big board right now, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, to try to hack
it. Hacker.
Yeah, which is great.
Tim, we haven't seen much of you out and about. We talked to you, but we just haven't seen much of you. What's going on in your world? Are you working on your tan, or are you working on a nice pasty white complexion?
Oh, no, I'm still working in my office. We do have a trip coming up in the next couple of weeks, though, so that should be good. I'll have to miss a cast.
Oh.
Because I'll be remote. I'll be remote. Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right.
Julio, anything hot coming up in the next week?
Other than a couple of weeks of vacation, not really, no.
There you go.
So you're like the Germans. You're just going to take off for the month of August.
My son, I have not seen my son.
What?
Yeah, the Germans basically leave in August. Like the country shuts down.
France, too, yeah. Don't they?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, now's our time to take over,
which we will see firsthand in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen my son in 2 months because he was spent a month with my in-laws in South America and then another month with my parents in New Hampshire. So I'm looking forward to the next 2 weeks because I can have some dad time with the kid after not seeing him for so long. I'm looking forward to that.
Hey, Julio, I got to ask you, I picked up a piece of news last week from Eric Wiefring. I hear Thomas Lee is back at the Tribune as a I don't know if he's going to be tech reporter, but he's going to be something. Because Wendy Lee is the tech reporter, but Thomas apparently came back to the Tribune from Detroit.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard of him.
I can't imagine giving up a garden spot like Detroit.
Yeah, what a great town.
Wow.
Which is unfair. We should pick on Detroit because it really is.
Well, you can go there now and buy a house for a dollar if you go to certain areas.
You know, I talk to people. I have some friends that live in Detroit, and one that was anxious to move back and did move back. A lot of people love Detroit, so we should probably not be so callous towards a city that's struggling. No.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, you have to admit, this market is so fabulous, and probably because we're so diverse economically, we've got so many different aspects going on that we're not really crushed too much. You know, if Boeing and Microsoft hiccup, there goes Seattle. And you know, there's a lot of markets like that, but we're pretty lucky here. I think this is why we came back from Chicago. Not that I didn't love Chicago and still do, and still think, what if we'd stayed? But coming back here and raising our kids, absolutely the right decision.
Yeah. One more reason.
It's funny that you say that, Steve, because I did exactly the same thing. I lived in Chicago for a while, then returned my adopted hometown of the Twin Cities. I did exactly that at night, so I can fully relate.
One more benefit of Minnesota is the Twin Cities area, and of course, the Minivate Gang podcast. So
there we go.
We should wrap, guys.
All right.
And have a great week, and we'll be back next week with another Minivate Gang podcast. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thanks, Julio. Take care, guys.
See ya.
No problem. See ya.
Bye-bye.